Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing this week? I hope, as always, that you are well. I'm a little bit stressed out, actually. I had to stay late at work to start working on the whole lighting and sound thing for the drama production in February. It should be great. Should be really fun. But yeah, I had to stay late so that I could sit in a meeting where I couldn't really understand what they were talking about, and I certainly couldn't contribute. So that was stressful by itself. Then I come home. I come home at about 9 o'clock, and I've got very limited time. I got 2 hours to eat dinner and hang out with the boyfriend and do the podcast, which is all, you know, very important, certainly. And while I'm trying to get the podcast started, the dog's running around. He's clack, 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 clack on the floor, and the cat's freaking out, and he's meowing every time I open my mouth. So the boyfriend, bless his heart, has locked himself in the bedroom with the cat and the dog so that I can have, you know, 15, 20 minutes of peaceful, quiet time. So that means I owe him some chocolate. There we go. It's out there in the public record. But anyway, so I've tried 4 or 5 times to get this started. We're ready to go. We're good. Everything's all right. So why don't we get started? This week will be a slightly longer podcast because I thought I had done one of these books already. I was convinced I had already done one of these books. And when I gave the clue last week, I got two people. I got Marissa in the U.S. and Paul in Spain, who both guessed that it was Cormac O'Brien's Secret Lives of the U.S. Presidents. Now, I thought I had done that book already, but turns out I had done his partner book, which is Secret Lives of the First Ladies. It's a very similar looking book, very similar style, but of course, a very different topic. So I have these two books, both pretty much the same, again, style and topic, and I figure, why do one now and then wait 6 months and do another one? Why not just put them together? So, congratulations, Paul and Marissa. You were 50% right. It is Secret Lives of the U.S. Presidents. It is also Hail to the Chiefs by Barbara Holland. Why don't we get started? All right. So we are coming up on another presidential election. If you're in the United States, you may have noticed that. And we're being asked to make a very important choice, as always. You know, we're being asked to elect someone to join a very, very powerful, or stay with, a very, very powerful and elite group of men who have shaped the history of the world in the last 200-some years. It's a very important decision, to be sure, and it is not one to be taken lightly. I mean, will our next president be a political powerhouse, a man who's able to take the reins of the country and lead it into a better and more just future? Will he be inept or corrupt, allowing his cronies and his pals to use the nation for their own personal gain? Or maybe he'll just be a cipher, one of those presidents who's forgotten by everyone except for the overachieving elementary school kids who think everyone will be impressed that they knew who Zachary Taylor was. We don't know. We can't know. And that's one of the most interesting lessons of this book. Every president, from Washington to Obama, was elected by the people in the hopes that he was the right man to lead the country. Every president was praised and damned. Every president was, before the election, sold as the one man who could save the nation from ruin and despair. If not all of those presidents lived up to their hype, well, therein lies the lesson. For people like me, who like their history to be amusing and bite-sized, this is the book for you. It's a gateway book for presidential history. You read this and then you go on to read more serious treatments of the presidents, hopefully becoming more appreciative of the vast spectrum of personalities that have guided our nation. And what a very interesting group it has been. There are, of course, the heavy hitters that everybody knows. Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, both Roosevelts, Johnson, Lyndon, not Andrew, all the men who made their marks on America. Washington, of course, set the entire tone of the presidency. He demanded formality and the acknowledgement that the office of president was one that should be treated with respect. And at the same time, he didn't want to be revered or treated like American royalty. He was, anyway. His decision to serve only 2 terms of office became unbreakable tradition, at least until FDR, and then law with the adoption of the 22nd Amendment. And while the stories that are attributed to him are mostly apocryphal, you know, chopping down the cherry tree, throwing a dollar across the Rappahannock, wooden teeth, all that good stuff, the real stories are even better. He spent vast sums of money on alcohol, had a terrible temper, and probably wouldn't even have been president if he hadn't married Martha Custis. In short, Washington was human, just like the other 42 who followed him. And then there are the infamous, the presidents who are excoriated for their misdeeds and who are the ones we all wish never actually happened. We got Nixon, Hoover, Buchanan, Harding, Pierce. Here's where we can put Andrew Johnson. These are the ones you tell your children about when they turn 18 and they're wondering who to vote for. Warren G. Harding, for example, was only president for 2 years before his death, but he manages to make the bottom of the best presidents list nearly every time. I mean, for one thing, he never wanted to be president. That was all his wife's idea. But Warren didn't like to say no, didn't like to stand up to people, so he let her railroad him into running for and winning the office. Once he was in the White House, he was perfectly happy to let Congress govern while he had sex with his mistresses and lost vast sums of money and the occasional priceless White House tea set to his poker buddies. It's said that his father told him he was lucky not to have been a girl, quote, "because you'd be in a family way all the time. You just can't say no." So while he amused himself, his cabinet and his friends did their best to rob the government blind. He was lucky that his ineptitude wasn't discovered until after his death in 1923. And then there are, of course, as I said, the ciphers. These are the presidents no one really remembers that much about. The middle-of-the-pack presidents, neither good enough nor bad enough to really be memorable. James Polk, for example. Did you ever dress up as James Polk for a history class skit? No, I didn't think you did. That's because he was a boring, humorless workaholic who had about as much personality as a table lamp. Still, he did get us into a war with Mexico, which resulted in the annexation of what we now know as the American Southwest, so, you know, there is that. How about Chester Arthur? He became president when Garfield was shot, and was most renowned for the fact that he was a very snappy dresser. He restricted Chinese immigration, so there's a point against, but supported the Pendleton Act, which made it harder to appoint unqualified drinking buddies to important civil service points. Other than that, he had parties, he drank a lot, and he was kicked out after he finished his term. There's 43 different men, 43 different stories, although there's only 42 in the book, and it's very easy to forget that these were real people, complex human beings with incredible merits and incredible flaws. Franklin Pierce was so despised that his own party came up with the slogan, "Anybody but Pierce." Kind of like Romney right now. Interesting. Anyway, John Tyler was so hated that he was actually burned in effigy, and he was the first president to receive a full-time bodyguard. On the other hand, Lincoln had a soft spot for pardoning soldiers who were shot for an unmeritorious conduct, and Theodore Roosevelt once opened a speech with, "Friends, I shall ask you to be as quiet as possible. I don't know whether you fully understand that I have just been shot." Now that is hardcore presidenting. It's also hard to remember that for all the mistakes made by presidents in our lifetimes, they're hardly new mistakes. I mean, Clinton was not the first guy to be unfaithful to his wife while president. In fact, compared to what some of the others got up to, a little Hummer under the desk is practically innocent. And W was not the first dim bulb with delusions of grandeur either. And, you know, Bush said many times that history would be the final judge of his administration, and I think actually he is right about that. Very few people in President Monroe's time would have known the horrors that would eventually emerge from the Missouri Compromise, and there were countless people who thought that FDR's New Deal would spell the end of American capitalism. To be fair, they still do. It's hard to objectively judge presidents we remember so vividly, but we can compare them to the ones who've gone before. So if you are new to presidential history, or you want an easily accessible refresher, this is an excellent text to have. Mind you, it is a little bit incomplete. It was published prior to Bush's second term, so there's a little missing at the end, but I think we can all remember, you know, a few years back. And maybe, just maybe, the next president will be so special. Well, this president is that special, but maybe we'll have more presidents so special that Mr. O'Brien will be moved to update and republish in, let's say, 4 to 8 years. So let me give you a quote from this book. It's from Martin Van Buren, and he said, "As to the presidency, the two happiest days of my life were those of my entrance upon the office and my surrender of it." So moving on. What was true for Secret Lives of the U.S. Presidents is just as true for this other book, Hail to the Chiefs, by Barbara Holland. We've had 43 incredibly interesting and varied men in the White House in our 200-some-odd years as a nation. We've had men of passion and energy, men who were weak-willed and lazy, men who preferred golf to governance, and men who worked themselves to death. Good men, bad men, tall men, short men, this book reminds us of something we need to recall from time to time, and as I mentioned before, what that is that the president is a human being with all that goes with being one. You know, being the president inevitably means becoming a larger-than-life figure. You know, people despised Bush, people adored Obama, they venerate Reagan, they abhor Clinton, all for what they see as virtues or flaws that only they possess. As if being the president not only means you have to be better than everyone else, but your failings must be that much deeper. The point of this book, and really any book on presidents, is that they were human beings, just like the rest of us. Being president doesn't make you immune to the fundamental flaws of being human, greed, apathy, short-sightedness, nor does it bless you with any transhuman virtues. Learning about and humanizing these men is a grounding and humbling experience and can keep you from both setting your expectations too high and allowing your disappointments to overwhelm you when your president doesn't live up to your expectations. Now, having said all that, if you want to read a book on presidents, it's a very funny book to read. The style is much more narrative than O'Brien's book, and it's exceptionally snarky. Holland wields her pen like a dagger, just stabbing and poking as she goes. I mean, she's not really mean, but she has no problem making fun of these men when it can get a good laugh. And I really did laugh a lot while I read this, much to the dismay of my co-workers and total strangers. They come in really short shots. So, for example, she says, Clinton was a big, affable fellow who hugged total strangers and felt their pain, like some ancient Norse bear god, probably named POTUS, good-natured but with a weakness for milkmaids. And they came in longer passages, too, like the Spanish-American War and the rather clever means by which we got the Panama Canal. It really is a very hilarious, irreverent read, until she gets about to Reagan, where that's where I'm not sure if she's being so sarcastic it's impossible to tell what's serious and what isn't, or she's really actually gushing over the great communicator. She imbues him with the same invulnerability that he seemed to have while he was president, showing the complaints of his critics, but then deftly removing the sting. George W. Bush gets much the same treatment, which kind of disturbed me a bit, although the book was published in 2004. I might be willing to chalk that up to post-9/11 fervor, but it does seem that from 1981 to present, she's not quite being as fair and balanced as she was to the other commanders-in-chief. Maybe it is harder to be objective when you actually had to decide whether to vote for the guy in office. Anyway, the final four presidents aside, it is a really fun book to read, and it's another good way to bone up on your presidential history. They really all were very interesting people in their own ways. I mean, even William Henry Harrison, who may have been too sick to be an interesting president, but still made for a fascinating person. So let me give you a quote from this book. She says, talking about James Buchanan, who was the one who came before Lincoln and the one who is usually credited with not stopping the Civil War, she says, many people consider James Buchanan the very worst president ever. I suppose they think they would have done better. I suppose they wouldn't have let Dred Scott happen, or John Brown, or secession, and there wouldn't have been any Civil War, and everyone would have lived happily ever after. Too many Monday morning quarterbacks, that's what we've got. So that is Barbara Holland, Hail to the Chiefs. So there we go. We have two good books, good synopsis, bite-sized books about presidents of the United States. If you're interested in learning about them, those are two excellent books to go to. I highly recommend them. All right. Before we get to next week's book, I got a couple of things to tell you. Number one, if you've been out around the internet today, the day that I'm recording, which is the 18th, you've probably noticed that there's a lot of websites that have gone dark. Wikipedia, of course, is the biggest among them. If you need to wiki anything today, you're out of luck. You better go to their cached page or something like that. Other sites like Reddit and Boing Boing, they've also gone dark. WordPress.com has gone semi-dark. The reason for this, of course, are two bills that are going through the U.S. government right now. SOPA in the Senate, the Stop Online Piracy Act, and in the House, it is the Protect Intellectual Property Act. And both of these are written in such a way, they're intended to stop overseas pirates from stealing copyrighted materials, but they are written in a very loose and kind of misguided way, so they could really be used by any copyright holder to smash anyone who uses their copyright in any way, shape, or form. It's very much open to abuse. It's very poorly written and shows a horrible, not only a horrible misunderstanding of how the internet works in its technical details, but a terribly naive view of how corporations work. And it kind of assumes that they will only act in the direst of emergencies, invoking the law, the clauses of this law. So, WordPress.com has very kindly included a nice little option in the settings of their websites where you can make your website go black for 12 hours. And that's what I have done. So, by the time this comes online, the dark time should be over, if I've timed it right. But I will have a banner up on the page, so you can stop censorship, you can go there, you can click that as a link, and it will take you somewhere where you can register your displeasure. In the meantime, tool around the net, look up stuff about SOPA and PIPA, and educate yourself. Contact a lawmaker if you're in the United States. If you're not in the United States, you're not a U.S. citizen, you still have a stake. Because remember, the laws that govern the internet don't just happen in the U.S. The internet's a worldwide thing. So if they screw things up in the United States, that will definitely have knock-on effects around the world. And your particular government will probably, if this law is successful, try to copy it, because that's what governments do. So that's kind of the unpleasant, annoying news. But here's the really good news I wanted to finish with. Audible.com, the Amazon-owned audiobook storehouse, found my blog. They found my podcast. Yay, they found it. And I got a nice little mail from them that says they would like to partner up. And the way it works is really simple. I drop in a little promo for Audible.com in the podcast, and you go and you sign up and you get a 2-week free trial, and they send me a little bit of money. Isn't that cool? And the money's good, you know, because running a podcast, man, that takes tons of cash. I mean, I've got the commute every day from the apartment to the world headquarters. There's the semi-clothed servant boys who are always fanning me with large palm leaves. You know, there's the wear and tear on things like body oil and loincloth repair and stuff. So it's an expensive business. So if you want to help out, that would be wonderful. But from next week or maybe the week after, whenever we get this all sorted out, I will start inserting little promos to send you to audible.com. Yes, I might be selling out, but by God, I think it's really cool. I got noticed and picked up. They want me. All right, the dog's freaking out and he would like to get out of the bedroom. So let me say that next week's book is a wonderful book about language by a regular panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. If you can guess what it is, congratulations. You win your own personal dictionary, which I will write out for you longhand. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. I greatly appreciate it. Please don't sue me if I've used your copyrighted material, and I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.